It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A UW-Madison researcher introduces her students to Italian food culture by slowing down, savoring the moment, and trying out recipes for themselves.
The recipes come from 1917, when a woman from Janesville named Giulia Lovejoy Cuniberti published an influential book about Italian cooking designed for American families.
She's affectionately known as Giulia when Grazia Menichella talks about the central woman in her research and how Giulia's thin cookbook made the Midwest an epicenter of Italian cooking traditions for decades to come.
Grazia Menichella is department chair and associate professor in the Department of French and Italian at UW-Madison. Grazia, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Take us back to the early 1900s when this Janesville woman publishes an influential cookbook, Practical Italian Recipes for American Kitchens. What was it like?
Well, let me tell you about Giulia. I love Giulia. My Giulia, Lovejoy Cuniberti, grew up in Janesville, Wisconsin, studied at Vassar College, and then moved to Chicago. And she was a social worker at the Hull House. And this is really key, the work as, you know, that she was doing at the Hull House, because the Hull House, just like, you know, other neighborhood houses, was very engaged with migrants and helped migrants settle, including Italian Americans. So we're talking about Chicago, but she's familiar, of course, with the, you know, with the Midwest. And so they're assisting also Italian women to become citizens, learn English, to assimilate American culture, including American cuisine. And so while she's at the Hull House, she meets her future husband, Fernando Cuniberti, who is from a town in the region Emilia-Romagna in the north of Italy. And so she's living in Chicago when she published the cookbook in 1917. But in order to purchase the cookbook, you actually, as a reader, needed to send 50 cents with shipping information to Giulia Lovejoy Cuniberti at 14 West Milwaukee Street, Janesville, Wisconsin. So there are only 56 recipes in this cookbook. So it's kind of a small, you know, project, let's say, a small cookbook. Yet, I think it's a very important cookbook that really had an impact in really promoting Italian cooking in the U.S. And so what is peculiar about this? Well, first of all, the title, Practical Italian Recipes for American Kitchens. Mm. So I want to stress that practical aspect. If you look at the recipes, they are very short, just list of ingredients, very few steps. She includes like suggestions. She has a foreword, but then she has suggestions in which she gives information like how to adapt the Italian dishes to.
So substitutions.
The substitutions, what to do. Tomato paste, Parmesan cheese, dried mushrooms, anchovies, garlic.
And I want to stop you at garlic because she calls it inoffensive and wholesome and never disagreeable. How do you view this take on garlic?
Oh, this is fascinating. So she defines this kind of cooking, cucina casalinga, the cooking of the home. And so she's praising the Italian housewife that is able to cook with little that is available to her, something from the garden, seasonal, fresh ingredients. And she takes this label, Cucina Casalinga, the cooking of the home, from Pellegrino Artusi, who is like the most famous food writer in the history of Italian cuisine. So he published the book, Signs in the Kitchen and the Art of Eating Well, in 1891, where he promotes Cucina Casalinga. Mm-hmm. And so she's very much in line with what he's saying. Like the purpose of his book, which is to promote the cooking of the, you know, of the regular Italian household and also the cooking of the small restaurant. So we're not talking about chefs. We're not talking about fancy cuisine. We're talking about, you know, the trattoria, the osteria. And he has a lot to say about garlic. So Artusi in his book says don't be afraid of garlic. Garlic is actually good for you. And so he talks about the benefits of garlic. And so garlic is always associated to Italian cuisine, but then it's also smelly and, you know, it's too much. And so even though I have to say Artusi promotes garlic and says, eat it, use it, it's good for you. Mm-hmm. When you read closely his recipes, he actually says, the right amount, not too much. So I feel that Julia has really engaged with the garlic question here in, you know, in Italian-American cuisine. So, yeah, so she gives very practical suggestions. And so she's promoting this model for the American cuisine. She's not really talking to Italian-Americans. She's talking to Americans. She believed that Italian cuisine is the best, more economical, and more interesting than American cuisine. These are her words. Hmm. And so we can learn, she says, from the, you know, from the Italian housewives, you know, what to do in the kitchen.
We are talking about the rich history of Italian culinary traditions in Wisconsin with Grazia Menichella, associate professor in the Department of French and Italian at UW-Madison. Let's go even more local here, an Italian-American community in Wisconsin that has been really upholding these food traditions and making new ones as we talk about the evolution. Tell us a bit about the history of the Greenbush neighborhood in Madison, mm-hmm. and also this area that was once known as Spaghetti Corners.
Okay. So the history of the Greenbush in Madison is very rich. And it's very important to me, and it should be important to all of us. The first club that was funded was in 1912, and so this was an association of the Italian Workmen's Club that decided to found this club in order to really create a support system for the community where they would pinch in, you know, and really help in those moments of need. And then 10 years later, 1922, they built the historical building that still stands strong at the corner of Park and Regent Street, the Italian Workmen's Club. And so that headquarters is still very active. In the basement, you have the Greenbush Bar that has recently been, you know, restructured and reopened under the leadership of Sam Brown. Upstairs is the headquarters of the Italian Workmen's Club. And this club is still very active. I had the pleasure of being there twice in the last few months. Once because they had their annual competition for tomato sauce, and I was one of the judges. That's, you know, a big highlight of my semester.
I bet.
And so the members, you know, they compete preparing, you know, their sauce.
Very
Cucina
serious.
Casalinga sauce, their own family recipe. And then it's followed by a dinner, of course, spaghetti and meatballs. And it was served also with the wine that the club still makes. And so you walk in and you see the wine press that, you know, I mean, should be in a museum. It's so beautiful. Oh. And so you're surrounded by all this history. On the wall, there is this huge Italian flag that the members in the early 20th century, again, they collect some money to buy and is preserved behind, you know, this glass. So, you know, it's really moving. I was particularly excited when 2 weeks ago I was able to conclude my semester on Sicily. So students read this novel set in Sicily, and then we went to the Italian Workmen's Club and we cooked in their kitchen in the club.
Wow.
It's a beautiful kitchen. And we made Sicilian dishes in the Sicilian headquarters, the dishes that the students have learned, you know, about by reading the novel.
Yeah.
And Angel Tripolin, who is the future president of the club, was there to welcome the students and talk about the history of the club. It doesn't get better than that. This is the Wisconsin idea.
It is their class coming alive.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So we hope to, you know, really strengthen even more. and hopefully to be able to preserve the history even more. There are some documents, a lot of photographs, of course, at the Historical Society. And then we have this beautiful, really important cookbooks by Catherine Tripoli Murray, local food writer of the Greenbush. And so her cookbook of the Greenbush is really both an important cookbook for the history of the Greenbush, because you get the map, you get the history, you learn about the Greenbush, but also the stories of the Greenbush, the stories of families, and the story of recipe.
As you're talking, it amazes me how cookbooks are such a clear lens into community and family and history and traditions, and all speaking this language through food. Why does food tell such a deep, important story?
Well, we are nurtured through food and language. Food is never just nourishment. It's not just, feeding. And so when we talk about food, when you're getting a recipe, you're never just getting the ingredients at the steps. I would say even more in Italian culture, because conviviality is a key element of Italian food culture. Sharing, both the food that's on the table, but also the skills, the traditions, the preparation, and women are really key in all this. So really from one generation to the next.
Grazia, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
That was Grazia Menichella, associate professor in the Department of French and Italian at UW-Madison, where she researches and teaches about the history of Italian cooking and how these traditions are carried on today in places like Madison's Greenbush neighborhood. Now we head to Sheboygan, where a local chef is carrying the torch of Italian culinary traditions with a focus on slow food and high-quality produce. Stefano Biglietti is a self-taught chef who owns and operates 3 restaurants and a market in Sheboygan. Stefano, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you, Kate. It's an honor to be here. Happy to join you.
Wisconsin has this rich history of Italian and Italian-American cooking throughout the state. You found it in your area in Sheboygan. Where do you see yourself in this tradition?
Well, I was sort of thinking about that as I was asked to do this, and I said, I'm not going to be your traditional through and through all the way Italian person, because I'm half German and half Italian. So I always jokingly say that I am highly creative, but punctual. So I'm trying. My German side keeps me in line, and my Italian side is flighty and creative and does more of that stuff. But I see myself as someone who's carrying on an incredibly important and ancient cuisine, which means so much to the world. And I do feel like someone that is helping foster and carry that forward. And I take it quite seriously, the commitment to authenticity.
In this through line of this incredibly important and ancient cuisine, how do you see that emerging in your kitchens among the chefs that you work with?
I think the most important thing that we have learned, and it took some time, it took me opening stinky packages of meat from, standard places and wondering why it didn't taste like Italy and doing exactly the same thing I would see in Italy. I've taken over 40 or 50 of my staff there, and you try to learn and come back. And I kept trying to stay in the conventional supply chain and create those foods, and it wouldn't work. So we really had to change what we did and how we sourced to make it taste like Italy. That's the simplest way I can put it, is that even though we bring the most beautiful prosciuttos and mortadellas and parmigianos and all of these incredible ingredients from Italy, when it comes to shopping in your backyard, that's the thing that really struck me in Italy. We've been in Sicily on farms and eating in Tuscany and in Puglia in the south, and you're always, oh, this is my uncle's pig, it's my cousin's lamb, we grow this. All year long, the wild boar eats my crops. This was a place in Sicily. And then at the end of the year, I eat him. And we were sitting there eating that wild boar. And so for me, it was really about sourcing and the incredible importance of that before anything else. It's no mother sauce or long, slow cooking sauces and things. It's really about buy the most beautiful and pristine things and add a little sea salt and maybe some herbs and kind of get out of the way. And I know that sounds cliche, but that's real Italian cooking. It's very minimalistic.
So with that philosophy, how have your relationships changed with the local farmers who are around you where you can source some of these ingredients from?
It's much easier to pick up the phone and call a mainline producer and say, bring me chickens, bring me beef, bring me this, bring me that. And it just shows up. The other way is developing relationships. Really, the way I like to look at it is building and growing community through food. And those are the connections that all of a sudden just the floodgates open. This guy knows a goose farmer. This person has lamb over here. This person is raising some rabbits. This guy has a couple of goats. We're buying a bison in February. So we're always going down that path. That's really the biggest difference. That's why we taste like Italy. Even though beef is raised here, chicken is raised here, the herbs are grown here, all of those perishables are from here, but the technique and the method behind it, it's a lot harder to do and it's not cheaper, I will tell you that, but it is far more rewarding. And I think I would not be a chef if I did this any other way because I would not be interested in doing it.
Building that relationship supply chain, if you will, that takes time. And I want that to segue, I think, into your latest venture in opening Stefano's Slow Food Market. Can you talk about the inspiration from that and how you view the slow food movement?
For me, the slow food movement is kind of what I just touched on a little bit. Like you said, it's a good segue. For example, we just brought in a new prosciutto called Pio Ticini prosciutto. It ages 100 days longer than any other prosciutto in Italy. It is not pressed, so it's called legato, which is actually a musical term, which you probably know, which means smooth and sort of, you know, fluid. But it's a much more bulbous and large prosciutto. So all of these things that we do, all of these products and things, it takes no more time to slice that piece of prosciutto than it does an inferior piece of prosciutto. So for me, I've always migrated towards the most sort of platonic ideal of an ingredient. I want the best prosciutto. I want the best mortadella. I want the best raw sheep milk cheeses from Abruzzo and from Tuscany. And that hunt for those things and honoring those things, that's a big, big part of what we're doing. It's just the idea that we're giving you, hopefully, a product that was raised. It took a little longer to raise, maybe had to go a little further afield to get it. And then we can give you those things. That's why our logo is a snail on a skateboard. Because, yeah, the snail is slow, but he's riding on a skateboard. So he's quick. And it's a kind of a goofy logo, but I love it. You know, yes, it takes longer and it costs more sometimes to get these products, but it's a fight that I am more than willing to fight because it, when you taste it and put it in your mouth, that's what it's about to me right now. So the real Italian cooking, and I've been blessed enough to be in kitchens all over Italy and cook in these places, but generally I tend to seek out the nonnas and the women in general. I've just had much better experience. They seem to be the key holders and the gatekeepers to tradition. And so I really tend to cook with them, but it is all about where is it from? It can't be made better by putting these seven things on it. So don't put them on it and let it be. And so that's really why I went the way I went in my sourcing for 30 years now, is because you learn that. You can't do better than Mother Nature and a really good farmer.
Stefano, thank you for the conversation and thank you so much for joining us.
You're so very welcome. I had a blast.
That was Stefano Viglietti, a self-taught chef who owns and operates three restaurants and a market with his spouse and business partner, Whitney Viglietti, in Sheboygan. And earlier, we talked with Grazia Menichella, chair of the Department of French and Italian at UW-Madison, as we explored the global importance of Italian cooking traditions and their place in Wisconsin.